Hello everyone and welcome to this week's edition of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell, Editor-in-Chief of Boat International, and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of superyachting is Caroline White, Deputy Editor. Charlotte, who usually joins us, has cast herself adrift for a few weeks for some much-needed R&R, so we're down to a crew of two for this week. But I'm so excited about this week's interviewee. And Caroline, you pinned this gentleman down. I mentioned it a few weeks ago, and since then, you've frankly done a heroic job of finding the time or pinning him down. As I said, it was a bit of cat and mouse for a while there. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, so it's Roland Emmerich, who is a film director who you may know from films like Independence Day, The Day After Tomorrow, White House Down. He kind of specialises in disaster films. But he's, as Stuart says, he's a busy guy. So we managed to snatch about 20 minutes with him just while he was starting post-production on his latest film. But very glad we could get him. So his latest film's called Moonfall, and it's quite a neat description of the plot premise. So you can kind of get the idea. He also owns a 33-metre classic yacht called Maid Marian II, which he keeps in Greece and charters out. He told me about how he fell in love with the boat, the changes he's made, and his favourite cruising grounds, as well as how James Cameron just pipped him to the post to make Titanic, which I thought was quite interesting.
That is quite interesting. Actually, I was looking up the highest grossing movies of all time just to see kind of where Roland Emmerich appeared in that list, and Titanic's still right up there. I think that's in the top five, so he got gutted to miss out on that gig, I think.
He did sound a little bit frustrated. I should also mention that his dogs very much wanted to get involved with the podcast, so you may hear them in the background, and they send their apologies.
I think after a year of Zoom and Teams and Google Meets and all this kind of stuff, everyone's quite used to dogs barking in the background. It's a forgivable sound now, I think. So Moonfall's all about... So tell me what... I did look at this in IMDb as well as I was doing a little background research into Mr. Emmerich. So it's all about... So an asteroid's going to hit the Earth...
I think the moon's going to hit the Earth.
Oh, right. The whole moon's going to hit the Earth.
I think the plot is literally Moonfall.
Oh, that's, okay. It's a very literal.
Literally Moonfall. Yeah, that's pretty much all he told me. But yeah, I think that's all you need to know, really.
Okay, so moon hits the Earth in Moonfall. Wow, that'll be one to watch out for. So... yeah, he's big on destruction, is Roland Emmerich. So he's, you know, in his movies, he's destroyed New York three times, I noticed, and ended the world in a climactic disaster movie, 2012. So yeah, he's big on destruction. But the boat is beautiful. I was looking at that as well. So it was built in 1931, launched in New York, built in New York. And Maid Marian II, the name has been with her since 1933. So he's kept the name and kept the tradition. She served in the Second World War as a patrol boat for the US Coast Guard. And he bought her in 2007. And he commissioned a British designer, John Teal, to complete a dramatic refurbishment and return her to kind of her original look and feel. And like Caroline said, she's available for charter. But just a really classic, beautiful, that kind of New York commuter boat look, very Gatsby, loved it. So definitely stick around for that interview. It's a really, really good one. And it's a great interview, actually, to lead us to the Easter break. That's right, listeners, we'll be taking a few weeks off from podcasting duties. I'm taking some time off, Charlotte's taking some time off, and Caroline's spending some time away as well. So it's just a bit tricky, but we will be back with a very big bang on the 23rd of April. So you'll have to do without us for 3 weeks. But hopefully that just means you'll be given a chance to miss us. We've got so many fantastic interviews already lined up for our return, so stay tuned and we'll let you know when we are back. Now, unbelievably perhaps to us in Europe, there is a major boat show happening across the pond, the Palm Beach Boat Show. And Caroline, you have picked out a few highlights from it. What have you got for us?
Yeah, so it's not brand new, but we've got a John Bannenberg classic, which will be in attendance. That's a 1998 Ocean Fast Thunder. She has a really eye-popping exterior, unsurprisingly for a John Bannenberg boat, and a top speed of 40 knots.
This boat looks like something out of the Jetsons. If you look at it, it belongs in space, this boat. It's a great-looking boat. And built in GRP, fiberglass boat. unusually for a boat of that length. So she's on sale at the show with Denison, asking just under $6.5 million. And yeah, she's got a big top speed. She is packing some heat. Two twin 3,000 horsepower MTU diesel engines, supported by a 4,600 horsepower gas turbine. So yeah, keep an eye on those fuel bills. She's an absolute classic piece of Bannerberg history, like you said. And the interior, actually, if the exterior is the Jetsons, the interior is Alice in Wonderland. It looks like the Mad Hatter could comfortably have a tea party in this interior. Wow. And that's not to demean it. It is a fantastically put together interior, but quite idiosyncratic. Let me leave it at that. But please go and look at the pictures. And if you're at the show, try and get on board, because amazing boat and a real, real piece of super yachting history there.
Very intriguing. Desperate to get on board now. Yeah, you can see looking at that boat why Bannerberg's designs are considered classics, because it does look like something that hasn't been invented yet. Incredible boat.
Yeah, that's true.
And talking of unusual looking boats, Princess's highly unusual X95, the first model in its X class, will be in attendance at the show. The idea is that it packs on this incredible amount of volume, and it certainly looks pretty stacked from the outside. So I challenge you to guess which one it is from the dock. She's a pretty unusual looking boat.
Yeah, she is. And the Princess has always been kind of the understated elegance, I suppose. That was always kind of the Princess brand. And so they've really broken with tradition with the X95, and they're playing the volume game, and they've done that in quite a novel way. Yeah, but fascinating looking thing. So again, you know, I haven't had a chance to look on an X95 yet, but I'm keen to, because I just want to get a sense of that space on board, because she's not a massive platform, but they've done a lot with it, like you said.
Absolutely agree. And my personal favourite of the boats that will be at Palm Beach is the San Lorenzo SX112, which has this really beautiful aft deck area with retractable terraces and just this lovely paired back exterior designed by Zukon International Project.
I agree. This is a great looking boat, the SX112. San Lorenzo have done great things with this SX series. I remember, again, you know, when it was quite like the Princess, like the X95 was for Princess, when they first released the SX88, I think was the first model in this range. Thinking at the time, that is very un-San Lorenzo. But look where the model range has gone since then. It's been an enormous success. And Max Perotti, the big boss of San Lorenzo, owns an SX112. So there you go. The boss has bought the boat, so you know it's a good
one. Yeah, stamp of approval.
Yeah. So obviously there are safety protocols in place. Everyone is required to wear a mask and at exhibitors and attendees, and temperature checks will be taken before entry. But having said that, I was talking to one of the exhibitors as the show was undergoing last minute prep yesterday, and he said very few people were observing the mask rules. So if you are going, please stay safe, keep your distance, follow the rules, and take that mask crucially. Another event kicking off this weekend is the Millennium Cup in New Zealand, running from the 28th to the 31st of March. This is the postponed Millennium Cup. It was due to run in February, but fell victim to a minor COVID outbreak in New Zealand. But fantastic news, it's finally happening. The Five Boats Racing also competed in the Mastercard Super Yacht Regatta, which took place a little earlier this month in Auckland, and which was won by the Ron Holland designed Ketch Tuera. Ron actually dropped me an email and said, can you make sure when you mention Tuera, add the adjective Ron Holland design. I'm very happy to do that, Ron. A legend of the business, Ron Holland. So absolutely right that we give him due credit for that amazing design. So Tuera will be there racing against Sassafras, Ashanti 4, Miss Silver and Catalina. So good luck to all those boats, crews and owners racing at the Millennium Cup in the beautiful Bay of Islands.
It all seems to be going on in New Zealand, strangely, perhaps not so strangely given the America's Cup, because we also have the Auckland Super Yacht Gathering coming up.
Well, that's happening now. So if this is released on Friday, I think Friday is the last day of it, actually. So it was, like you said, co-founded by Linda Berry, formerly of this parish. And there's some great speakers this year, including Andrew Winch and Charlotte Devereux, who is the owner of this stunning classic motor yacht Seabreeze 3, which he's just put through quite an extensive refit or even restoration. They really tore it down and built it back up again. It's a beautiful boat. So I hope everything went well out in Auckland, and I look forward to seeing pictures and hearing a bit more from the Super Yacht Gathering. So Caroline, as ever, you've also been trawling the headlines. What are the biggest ones this week?
I have indeed. Well, we don't often cover concepts, but this one has two big names behind it. The Dutch yard Ocean Co and design studio Pininfarina, which is most famous for its work with Ferrari. They have teased a new hybrid superyacht concept named Kairos. It features technical design and engineering from Lateral Naval Architects and has been designed around what is described as an e-hybrid propulsion system, which uses batteries as the primary source of energy. Designed with Ocean Co's NXT sustainability initiative in mind, the name Kairos is taken from the ancient Greek for time. More details about the concept are set to be revealed in the coming months, but you can take a look at her seriously unusual asymmetric design on our website if you want to get a look a bit earlier than that.
And yeah, wild looking boat. And I would just urge you also to go back a few weeks to listen to my interview with Giles Taylor from the podcast, who was working with Ocean Co, who is working with Ocean Co on the next sustainability initiative. He reveals a bit more in that. And how it's all coming together. But yeah, great to see some designs coming out of that initiative.
Absolutely. And sticking to the innovation theme, if you don't know anything about Arxen, they're a relatively young brand that plans to build these very cool green explorer yachts. We actually did an interview for this podcast with Jasper Smith, who's the founder, if you want to go back and learn a bit more about them. They had started work on their first hull not too long ago. Well, that's now been sold, which is great news. So Arxen's 85 is described as an autonomous hybrid explorer, and it was designed by Humphreys Yacht Design with interiors by Design Unlimited. The hull and superstructure will be made from recycled aluminium, capable of being recycled again at the end of the vessel's life. They've really thought through every life stage of the boat. So construction began last September under the name Project Ocean at the Isle of Wight based White Shipyard Company, and it is the first unit of the 26 metre model. Arxen has also announced that construction will begin on a second hull in April with delivery scheduled for late 2022, and a third unit will enter production later this year for delivery in 2023.
I'm so happy this boat's been sold, and you can definitely see the influence of Rob Humphreys in its styling. It's very, you know, it's got some definite sailing influences. But you know when these companies start, and they start brilliant designs, great names behind them, and you're just praying for that first order for them. You're just desperate to get that first
Absolutely.
Order because that's the kickstart to the momentum. And you see some companies like this start and they never get that order, and
it's kind of painful.
Just disappear. Yeah, but so I'm thrilled Arxen have sold this boat, because hopefully it will be the first of many, because they're great looking things, and they're, you know, mini, these pocket explorers. And this boat, it's 85 foot long, so 26 meters, and it's got a range of 7,000 nautical miles, which is incredible, really. So great news all round. Very happy for Arxen and Humphreys Yacht Design Unlimited, and everyone involved in that project.
Absolutely. Well, sticking with the explorer theme, Choi Li Yachts has teamed up with Overing Yacht Designs to reveal a new line of explorer yachts. Designed with American owners in mind, the new series of rugged expedition vessels is described as the perfect platform for any ocean-going adventure. Key features include full displacement steel hulls, bulbous bows, and long-range fuel capacities. The Choi Li Yachts Explorer line includes four new models, a 107, a 126, a 130, and a 132. They will feature a tank deck that allows the crew to move around the yacht from bow to stern uninterrupted, and will also include a large flybridge lounge and aft beach club. Fresh and comfortable design comes courtesy of Seattle-based Sylvia Bolton Design for the interiors.
They don't mess around Choi Li, do they? When they launch a new line, it's four brand new models.
Exactly.
Good on them. So the data story this week kind of references, I suppose, a little bit our interviewee, because obviously Roland Emmerich owns this beautiful 1931 classic, and classics are also the subject of this week's data story.
Absolutely. So everyone loves a classic. We are currently working on the story of the 89-year-old Camper & Nicholson's yacht Marala for the June issue, which is currently being refitted at Pendennis. And that is an amazing boat packed with history. Everyone in the editorial team has fallen in love with her. So we thought we'd take a look at this rather romantic sector of the superyacht fleet. When I say classic, I mean superyachts built before 1975. That seems to be the common definition for classic regattas, so we thought we'd stick with that today. And as always, we're looking at boats that are 24 metres and above. Looking only at yachts that are still in activity, there are 1,243 classic yachts afloat. They represent about 10% of the current fleet, and that means that nearly 90% of all superyachts afloat have been delivered since 1975.
That's mind-blowing, isn't it?
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
I mean, people look at the superyacht industry and think it's this long-established, well-traditioned kind of industry, but it's really not. I mean, it's still such a nascent industry, and really in the last 20 years, especially. Very young. And, you know, Lursen, you look at these massive shipyards that you kind of think, I mean, Lursen has been around forever, but they haven't been building superyachts really that long at all. There you go. We're still a young business.
Absolutely. Even if those of us in it are getting a little older now.
Yeah.
So the average length of these classics is 33.8 metres and the average age is 70 years. Looking at where they were built, we can see that the US used to be a very big producer pre-1975, building 26% of classics, whereas the US produced only 3.5% of new yachts listed as in-build or ordered in this year's global order book. So that's 26% pre-1975 compared to 3.5% in this year's global order book. So the UK was in a similar position with 17% of classics compared with only 7.4% in this year's global order book.
So that speaks to the kind of the globalisation effectively of superyacht production, doesn't it? So the centres of power before 75, the US building a quarter of all classics, and since then their superyacht manufacturing base has kind of been hollowed out. I mean, there's some real highlights like Delta and Westport, etc. But apart from that, a lot of builders have gone, and now it's a much more global industry.
Absolutely. And actually, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I do remember seeing that Italy had grown enormously in terms of production since 1975. So there are winners and losers in this. The largest classic yacht afloat is the 150-metre motor yacht El Marousa, which was built by Samuda in the UK in 1865 as the Egyptian presidential yacht. And finally, the oldest is the 33-metre schooner Isla Ebusitana, built by Joseph Cole in Spain in 1856.
Wow, what a throwback. 33-metre schooner Isla Ebusitana, the oldest superyacht that we track. It's a beautiful-looking thing, actually. Do Google her. That is Isla, Isla Ebusitana, Ebusitana. Lots of great pictures online of that beautiful schooner. Okay, thanks, Caroline. And from one classic to another, let's hear from Roland Emmerich about his beautiful 1931 motor yacht, Maid Marian II.
Roland, thank you so much for joining us today. I understand that you've been busy filming and are now doing some post-production work. Can you tell us anything about what you're working on to start off with?
I was shooting in Montreal a film called Moonfall. And it's about the moon falling to Earth, but the moon is not what we think it is.
Oh, sounds intriguing. Can you tell us anything more? Who's in it or anything like that?
Halle Berry's in it, Patrick Wilson, Donald Sutherland, Michael Pena. So it's a cast, you know, of many.
Wow, fantastic. And now you're back in LA. Are you speaking to us from LA?
Yes. Okay.
And stuck into post-production work, which sounds less glamorous.
Yeah.
Well, as background to Maid Marian II, which is your 33-metre yacht, can you tell us a little bit about your personal history with boats, what your first or most memorable experiences on the water were, and if you've owned any boats before you owned her?
I didn't own any boats before. My first experience with boat was 2002. I chartered the Douze France, which is a 38-meter catamaran in the Caribbean, and I fell in love with being on boats in this one trip. So I rented this boat several more times, and then I wanted to spend Christmas in Thailand after the 2005, you know, like kind of tsunami, I kind of thought 2006 is a good time to go there and support Thailand and stuff. And so I remembered that when I was at the Amanpuri Hotel in Phuket, that they had like chartered boats, you know, and I just chartered their biggest boat, which was the Maid Marian. At that time, she was still all white and you know, looked a little bit strange, but I just fell in love with that boat. And I kind of felt, and then naturally immediately kind of inquired if she's for sale, and she was for sale. And then I kind of went on to say, I will bring this boat back to its former glory, because it was like kind of at that time, I think, I just had passed the 75 years of existence.
Amazing. So to start off with, can you tell me why you fell in love with her? Because she's a quite beautiful sort of American classic wooden boat, is that right?
Yes. She was all wood, you know, and she was actually, when she was built, she was a steamboat, which was like interesting for me. And I kind of didn't want to kind of restore her to her original, you know, glory. I kind of thought, you know, the whole top area was like kind of with two big, you know, like, you know, big extra boats, you know, for like kind of safety. And you don't need that anymore. So I kind of thought, oh my God, you know, the top part is like kind of the ideal place for, you know, like kind of putting, you know, like kind of seating up, putting a sun, you know, like kind of bathing area. So that's what I decided to do.
So that was a big change to the sort of exterior deck. Did you make any other sort of big changes on board in terms of the use of spaces, or was it mostly just kind of updating the look?
Yes, there was like a dining room in the front, you know, which I turned into one of the cabins. Double cabin within a door, within suite bathroom, and then there was like in the main salon was actually two rooms, and I made it one, so it's like kind of more bigger, and you know, just like kind of a little bit more roomy.
That sounds lovely, much more modern. So I understand that you got the British designer John Teal involved in the refurbishment. Mm-hmm. So I've heard his name in connection with interiors and furniture design, but it's the first time I've heard his name in connection with yachts. So why did you feel he was the right man for the job?
He did my house in London. And I kind of just fell in love with him because he's like such a interesting man, and, you know, and has such a, you know, amazing taste. And he just like kind of that time became a little bit a friend of mine. And I kind of thought, you know, why you do you have any interest in like kind of doing the rebuild of a, you know, refit of a yacht? And when he saw the boat, he fell in love with it too. And he lived pretty much like for 7-8 months in Phuket.
Wow. So you did the project in Phuket, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And was that at a particular shipyard, or did you kind of gather your own people?
They have like one big shipyard there. Don't ask me the name because it's a Thai name with a lot of syllable which you cannot pronounce.
No problem. And can you describe the style of the kind of decor that you've got on the boat now?
Well, we used, there were like kind of still a couple of things left of the original furniture. Two chairs, you know, which are beautiful. And, you know, and the boat was like kind of built pretty much like kind of from 1929 to 1931. And so that was a great kind of area. And we just like try to remodel the boat exactly like it looked then, but with a slight modern touch. So it is like we put everywhere air condition. We put which was there already, but not like working very well. We put new bathrooms in with like kind of like John found these great like kind of bathrooms with like where the water you know, like kind of, you know, thing is like up there in the wall. So it was a little bit tricky. But overall, it's like, it's a very, very, he did a very, very good job. And so, and yeah, and now, you know, it was like all in Thailand, you know, and Thailand, they're very good with woodwork. So, you know, so they, we rebuilt the boat pretty much in teak.
Really?
It was like, yeah, it was like other woods. Naturally, they have like a lot of teak wood there. So that's what I chose to do. And it made the boat much heavier, but it also like helped to make it a little bit more stable.
Oh, perfect. Okay. And so you mentioned there that you had a couple of chairs that were from the boat's previous mm-hmm. life. Was there anything else, any other kind of memorabilia you kept from before, or was most of the stuff?
There were some photos existing, so they hang now everywhere in the cabins, where you like see how the boat looked once and now how it looks now.
Fantastic. And then I understand that you're an art collector, so did you bring any pieces on board yourself?
Yeah, I brought some of, I have like kind of a lot of African stuff, so I brought some of my African things, you know. And I also have like a huge Mao collection, so there's a couple of Maos standing around.
Why not?
Yes, yes. And then what I do a lot is like just buy stuff for the boat. I was once in Argentina and found like kind of some great paintings and artwork, and I was bringing that to the boat. And now after the refit, you know, I will bring some more of art to the boat, because it's like, it's always good to give it a personal touch.
Absolutely. So I understand that the boat charters in Greece. So can you tell mm-hmm. me why Greece? What do you love about that part of the world?
Well, I was like kind of just, I have to say, tired of the Asian, you know, ocean. I was like beautiful, but like I was there for 7, 8, 9 years or so. And I kind of just thought, you know, it's like time to move the boat somewhere else. And I have family in Europe, in Germany, and friends all over Europe. So I kind of thought it's much easier to collect a group to go on the boat. And then I'm a big fan of the Mediterranean in general. But then I made like 2 trips through the whole Mediterranean area. And I realized that Greece is the best for my boat, at least, you know, because I didn't want it to kind of change the boat so it can dock. It has to still dock sideways, like old fashioned boats do. And in Greece, you don't have that many, marinas anyway. You like mainly stay in bays all over the islands, and you know. And last year, or like the year before last year, we went to the other side of Greece, which was beautiful, you know, Corfu and all that area. And so it's, I just love Greece as a cruising area, because it's so it's you can do all kinds of different things there.
Yeah, and it's so relaxed compared to like the Côte d'Azur and things.
Exactly.
It's lovely. Yeah. And do you have any favorite places in Greece that you love to go? Any favorite islands or restaurants,
well,
or anything?
I love Mykonos a lot, because and everybody, you know, who's like on my boat knows that we like either start the cruise or end the cruise in Mykonos. And that's the cool thing about Greece. You can go to a total remote place, you know, and then in 1 or 2 hours, you're like in the midst of like kind of great restaurants and great beach clubs in Mykonos. So that's Mykonos is a little bit like kind of feels a little bit for me like Saint-Tropez in the 70s or 80s. It's like a really, really up and coming, area where like kind of, you know, you can get amazing food there. And I'm a little bit of foodie, and that's why I'm there a lot.
Perfect. Fantastic. And do you have any ambitions to cruise her anywhere else in the world, or are you happy with Greece?
Well, I for now it's will be Greece, but we're planning to go to Turkey as soon as possible. I want to try out the Croatian coast. So there's a lot of stuff I can still do. Maybe I go again. I loved to go to Formentera in Spain. That was a really, really great trip with that. And so, but like mainly, it's mainly now in Greece, you know, and Greece has so many different things, you know, to do, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously this year has been quite a strange and difficult one. Can you tell me, has anything changed about the way that you've used the boat in the past year or the way that it operates for charter? Can you tell me?
Well, I actually used this COVID time, you know, to remodel the boat. I realized, perfect, you know, that last year I couldn't go because also I was like had to wait around to kind of be available to shoot a movie, which we actually did, you know, during COVID time, which was quite interesting. And so last year I wasn't on the boat at all, and I decided together with my manager Justin that we'll like kind of go and now do finally the remodel of the top of the boat, because we rebuild pretty much the every 10 years you have to rebuild the whole bottom of the boat, because it's a wooden boat, so you have to do that every 10 years at least, like maintain it. And now there was like a lot of rotten wood in the top of the boat, which we said like kind of we have to do one day, and that was like kind of the right time to do it. And so we decided to do that.
Yeah, so you took advantage of the timing. That sounds good.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I was going to ask you, as somebody who spends a lot of your time very, very busy filming and editing, that sort of thing, can you tell me how your time spent on the water acts as a balance to that, how you unwind when you're on board?
Well, it's a great balance, you know, because on a boat, you know, when you're like on a boat, you know, you're like kind of totally start to relax after 2-3 days, and you know, and it's that, you know, like relaxation, which is a great counter program to my otherwise really hectic life. You know, I have to travel around a lot, I have to do stressful things. So for me to be on a boat, you know, especially on a boat like this, you know, which is old lady, you know, like kind of but quite luxurious, you know, I might say, and that's it's a cool balance to what I do, you know. And that's also what drew me to like boats, you know, because when we chartered the first time the Douce France, which is also a super elegant, beautiful boat, my sister and I, we learned that this is like the greatest way to have a vacation, because you have like kind of some sort of a luxury hotel which moves from island to island, you know. And that is like what really attracted me, that you can be in different places, but you still have your home away from home, always there.
Absolutely. Do you have any favorite, so you mentioned there kind of cruising with your sister. Do you have any favorite memories from being on board Maid Marian too? Any particularly lovely cruises or time you spent with friends?
Oh, we had like a lot of lovely times on that boat, especially in Thailand, naturally, because Thailand is also beautiful. And, you know, we always like did there the grand tour in the, you know, in like kind of we went from Phuket to kind of certain islands. You know, it was always the grand tour. We knew exactly where to go, where to eat, where to this. And that's what you like learn, that on a boat, it doesn't, you don't need really so much, you know. You need like kind of just a beautiful landscape and some places where you know you can go when you want to get off the boat. And and that's what also like attracted me to Greece, you know. It reminded me very much like of the Thailand island experience, you know, because in Thailand, you know, there's this area around Phuket, which is probably the most beautiful you know, like kind of place in Asia to kind of have a boat. And I was looking for something similar in Europe, and I found it in Greece.
Amazing. I have one final question for you. So it's a silly question. Have you ever wanted to make a super yacht disaster film?
Oh, well, like kind of James Cameron did this with Titanic.
Yeah, so. Happy.
I don't want to. And actually, it's like interesting. It's like it's a funny little side story. I was always, I'm always inspired by what's in bookstores. And at that time, when I was kind of looking again around, you know, I saw everywhere books about the Titanic, and I said, oh my God, that would be a great subject matter. So I talked to a couple of people, and they said, James Cameron is already doing
it. Oh, no.
Yes.
So almost exactly the same time, but he
Yeah, but I was a little, it. I was like one and a half years too late.
Oh, no. Oh, dear. Well, maybe you'll get to do the first super yacht disaster film, and then you will have beat him to it.
Yeah.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Roland. I really appreciate your time.
Okay, cool.
Thanks, everyone, for listening and tuning into this week's Boat Briefing, which was mixed and produced by Ed Cavendish and is a production of Boat International Media. A reminder that we are taking a break now for a couple of weeks, but we will be back towards the end of April for lots more boating content and fantastic interviews with some great names from our industry. So like and subscribe, and we'll see you then.